Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I thought I'd throw out a good one to start with. What happens when you tell everybody in the Pacific Northwest, if you happen to own a piece of land, not only are we going to tax the daylights out of you, we're going to have regulations to beat the band, and then if we invite a whole bunch of our homeless friends and drug addicts to set up shop on your property and do so illegally, I mean, there's no debate that they are trespassing, they are creating all kinds of havoc, then we are going to come to you, the landowner, and tell you, you have to pay to clean it up. And if you don't clean it up on our time schedule, then we're going to start fining you up to $500 a day. Now, if you say, Lars, that's just a conspiracy theory. No, in this case, I'm talking about something that's actually happening in the city of Seattle. Wouldn't surprise me a bit if it's happening in all the other major cities of the Pacific Northwest. Let me get into the details of it in a moment. First, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you're a naysayer, you go right to the top of the list. And if you want to answer our X poll, boy, is this one going to be a barn burner. Because with the fight over redistricting that is going on in the state of Texas, with Democrats hopping on a private plane to fly 1,000 miles away to escape their responsibility in Texas, and then you've got this irony that where Oregon Democrats declared that Republicans were traitors because they walked out and denied quorum in the Oregon legislature. Remember when that happened? Because Republican lawmakers said, we're very much in the minority. We don't have the votes to beat some of these crazy things that are so important to the people we represent in our home districts in Oregon. Now, they said, then we will deny quorum by simply leaving Salem, leaving the legislature. The Democrats then, even though they're a supermajority in both houses and they have the governor's office and the secretary of state and the treasurer and the attorney general, they won't be able to vote these new laws through. Well, that made the Democrats so mad, they were almost as mad as when Lincoln took their slaves away. But when the Democrats in Salem decided, we will punish those evil Republicans for walking out, they passed a law, and the law basically said, if you walk out of the Senate, then you can never come back. You can't run for that office ever again, and they made that law. Do you know what they're doing now? That Texas Democrats are doing the same thing, only over an issue of redistricting. The Democrats in Oregon, and I suspect those in Washington State as well, they are applauding the move. They're saying this is exactly what you should do. I mean, these folks could not be more two-faced if they tried hard at it. And sometimes it does seem like they try very, very hard to display the fact that they have two sets of standards. One standard applies to Democrats, so Democrats fleeing from the Texas legislature are to be applauded by their fellow Democrats, but Republicans who leave the Oregon legislature under the same kind of circumstances to deny a quorum, they are to be condemned and, if possible, outlawed from running for office altogether. And it seems as though the Democrats don't even realize how hypocritical they are being. But should America hold another census, one that only counts those who are legally in America? In other words, citizens, green card holders, those with a legitimate visa, count those people, but don't count all the tens of millions of illegal aliens. Do you know who's making that proposal right now? And I think it's a bold one. I don't know if he's actually serious to push it through, but President Trump has actually said he has ordered the Commerce Department, they're the ones in charge of doing the census that comes every 10 years. He said people who are in our country illegally will not be counted in the census. Now, When he's ordered the Commerce Department to do this, it's still unclear. We are 5 years since the last census. We are about 5 years, soon to be 4 years, from the next census. Whether that would apply only to the census that will be taken just over 4 years from now, or whether or not Donald Trump is actually saying, we're going to do a brand new census, count only the people who are in this country legally. We are not going to count the illegal aliens. And can you imagine the redistricting of America when that happens? Can you imagine how things would change in California, in New York, in Texas, in Oregon and Washington? Can you imagine how much the count would change if you weren't allowed to count illegal aliens and then literally give them representation in the United States Congress? I think this is going to be delicious. The Democrats are going to be losing their minds. The X poll, should America hold another census to count only those who are legally in America? I'd answer that one yes. If Trump says we're going to do another census, usually it would take about a year at least to set up all the infrastructure that it takes to do a census and probably 2 years to complete it after that. But it'd likely be done before Donald Trump left office. It would make the Democrats lose their minds. I mean, after all, do you remember back when the Democrats only wanted to count some Americans as 2/3 of a person, slaves? Yeah, they love that idea. In fact, they insisted on it. So today's X poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. So what's happening in Seattle in particular that illustrates this problem so well? As the Seattle Times and Como Television are reporting it, homeless people who set up their camps on private property create escalating costs for landlords. And some of those landlords are now being told by the city of Seattle, you must clean this up. You must clean it up to our satisfaction. And you have to do it on the city of Seattle's timeline. Now, it's the city of Seattle, just like the city of Portland, that have created this problem to begin with, who've rolled out the welcome mat for illegal alien, for homeless and for drug addicts. And when those drug addicts come, and why do they come to the Pacific Northwest? Because they hear the living is easy here. They will feed you. They will provide for your medical care. They may even give you a low barrier, wonderful little apartment or tiny house, and you can still take heroin, you can still take your fentanyl, you can still get drunk as a skunk. Well, what's happened now? A city inspector has begun visiting locations in Seattle and telling the landlords, you're going to face a fine of up to $500 every single day that this has not been, well, cleaned up. And one of the representatives for a property owner told Como News, full credit to them for the story, they recognize the responsibility they have, but it's going to cost $10,000 just to deal with the damage caused by the people who came in and caused all the havoc. Thousands of dollars to restore the lot, abate the graffiti, abate the trash, and help out the homeless. It costs thousands of dollars. Where are they supposed to put that kind of money? And then to be told by the city, and if you don't do it, you're going to be fined $500 every day until it's cleaned up to our satisfaction. That is absolutely outrageous in my book. And if I get a naysayer on it, I'd be glad to talk to them. Can you go to somebody else's property, do that kind of damage, and then expect that the city won't punish you for doing the damage? They'll punish the person who owns that piece of property. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Summertime.
People always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know he got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
You know, Portland Public Schools offered the kids a strange message for the upcoming start of classes. Parents and students have been fleeing that district, and enrollment has dropped sharply, and for good reason. Just over 50% of the students can read at grade level. Less than half can do math. So the new PPS superintendent, Kimberly Armstrong, invited a failed NFL quarterback turned radical political activist to offer up his thoughts about excellence. Colin Kaepernick famously took a knee during America's national anthem as a protest against the very idea of America. He did that almost a decade ago. No NFL team has signed him since. Kaepernick's activism includes declaring, quote, the entire American enterprise is illegitimate and highlights racial disparities. What a great guest to invite to the schools and the students. He raised money to bail out rioters out of jail in Minneapolis after the riots there 5 years ago. That's kind of ironic, since Kaepernick still works for Nike, who the New York Times confirms still makes some of its shoes with Uyghur slave labor in China. Apparently that kind of slave labor is okay. America's racial discrimination is not. Kaepernick is working on a deal to get PPS to use products from his company called Lummi AI. What critical education function does Lummi AI fulfill? It's an artificial intelligence company that makes it easier to publish comic books. Well, that's kind of an interesting comment on schools in Portland, if that's the truth. Kaepernick spoke for about 10 minutes yesterday morning, offering up lines like, no one rises to low expectations. By the way, Oregon schools dropped the requirement that you have to know how to read or do math to graduate from high school 5 years ago. The requirement still has not come back. I wonder if Colin Kaepernick would count that as a low expectation. And by the way, I want to correct a mistake. I said two-thirds. I actually meant three-fifths in reference to the constitutional requirement and counting slaves in America. So, in any case, question of the day today brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and you get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Did Oregon's voter-approved experiment with legalizing hard drugs and Washington State's similar experience with having the courts legalize hard drugs for a time, did that actually drive up crime rates? Well, the Wall Street Journal is reporting today. A new study finds that Oregon and Washington State experiments with decriminalizing drug possession. Actually, I would correct the journal on that. It's not decriminalizing. They outright legalized hard drugs, caused a surge in serious violent crime and property crime, especially in Seattle and Portland. The paper, a collaboration among five criminologists, is the first one to demonstrate that the state's so-called reforms, since undone by their legislatures, increased crime relative to the rest of the country. The paper's authors compared the states of Oregon and Washington with 23 other states. They use roughly 3 years of data from the National Incident-Based Reporting System. What did they find? The authors found statistically significant increases in total violent crime, in murder, robbery, aggravated assault, total property crime, burglary, and motor vehicle theft. Their results are equivalent to a roughly 14% increase in daily violent crime in both states. Daily property crimes rose by about 21% in Washington State, about 9% in Oregon. My favorite post on X today, and yes, it's a bit critical of the Trump administration, but I think the criticism fits. Imagine living in a state, any state, that needs better schools, roads, and hospitals, and your representative is now fighting fluoride and clouds. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to all the Oregon Democrats who are now praising Texas Democrat lawmakers for walking out of their legislature, even though when Oregon Republicans did the same thing, they condemned it and passed a law to ban the walkouts from running for re-election to their seats. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They did it for me. It is beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. So, reporter and political activist Brandi Crews posted up, if you support this, you are sick. There is no way around it. She talks about the fact that the Sumner Bonnie Lake School District allowed men in lingerie to parade themselves around for children at an elementary school. This is more of that drag queen nonsense. And one of the responses from red-pilled ex-liberal, it is pure sexual deviancy indoctrination and sexually based grooming, period. They have always wanted the kids. They are now so emboldened they're going after your kids at school. It should be considered lewd and obscene behavior against a child, and people like that should be, and then blank after that. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Let's go to Buckley, Washington, and talk to Charlie. Hey, Charlie, thanks for calling. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Lars. This is Charlie. Is former President Obama actually exonerated for committing treason against our country?
He has, under the current decisions of the courts, he has presidential immunity for all the actions he took. I had hoped it was otherwise, but I've talked to lawyers about it, and the lawyers tell me he has presidential immunity. So the short answer is not exonerated, not cleared of the charge. You can't bring the charge against him because he has immunity. Let's go to Chris. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Eli, love your show. So Earl Blumenauer, former congressman, boycotted the 2018 State of the Union address when President Trump had his first run in office. And he sent in his place an illegal alien and DACA recipient from Oregon by the name of Aldo Solano. Well, fast forward to 2020 when Governor Brown had the census. Who did she choose to lead the Oregon census? No less than Aldo Solano, the same illegal alien. So the illegal alien that ran the census in 2020 just completely, I think, destroyed the numbers. So we should redo the census as soon as possible. And Aldo Solano, as far as I know, is now working for the Oregon Food Bank. But those numbers are highly suspect. And if we redid the census, I think we'd lose the 6th congressional district in Oregon.
I think you probably would because you take a look at what's going on in Texas right now. They say that mistakes made during the Biden administration as they finished up the last census from 2020, that what they determined was that Texas probably would have been entitled to two more seats in Congress. So these are hugely important, not just for votes in the House, but they're also important when it comes time to elect a president, because the number of members of Congress you have determines how many electoral votes are cast by that state when a candidate wins that state. California would lose, New York would lose, it looks like Texas would gain. I think you're absolutely right. And having another census, if you realize the last one was all gimmicked up, then we got to go back and fix it now. I don't disagree with President Trump one little bit. It is Thursday, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Donald Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and Conspiracy Theory Thursday. It's a pleasure to be with you. Now, I led off by talking about this outrage out of Seattle, which I think is duplicated in most of the other cities of the Pacific Northwest, that property owners are being told the powers that be, you know, the mayors, the city councils, the legislature, and the rest are going to make Oregon and Washington welcoming places for homeless drug addicts. They will live on the streets. They will camp on people's property. They will create damage to that property. And then we'll tell the property owners, You have to clean it up, and if you don't, we're going to punish you with heavy-duty fines. So I thought we'd talk to Kevin Dahlgren about that as well. Kevin is an activist and drug counselor. He runs the Substack called Truth on the Streets by Kevin Dahlgren. And Kevin, you don't just write about it. You don't just go out and watch these people, but you've actually taken part in some fairly major cleanups of the problems that are created. I'd like to get your take on what's going on right now.
Yeah, I have. Thanks for having me on again, Lars. I'm very boots on the ground. I like to think I'm all long on action. I'm a big believer in being boots on the ground and immersing yourself in that community and doing your best to make a real difference. And I have been involved in very major, major cleanups and have helped run and create very successful programs to really restore, reclaim major green spaces and even a city to show really that it's possible. And really all it takes is a lot of effort and political will.
Well, in fact, you were involved directly in cleaning up the Springwater Trail, which, if people aren't familiar, that thing is 22 miles long. It's for walking, biking, yes, and all the rest of this. And it was essentially, tell me if I'm overstating this, it was taken over by homeless encampments who then made it unwelcome or dangerous for the legitimate users who might go down to actually enjoy it.
Yeah, completely taken over, very unsafe. Some areas are still very unsafe. I worked for the city of Gresham. Gresham has 4.7 miles of those 22 miles, including 17 miles of the paths that go into the deep woods, right? When I started in Gresham in late 2018, we had basically a higher per capita homeless there than almost anywhere. Hundreds of homeless, millions of pounds of trash, very unsafe. There was murders. There was sexual assault. It was just terrible. No regular person ever would go down there. Long story short is in just under a year, we had completely restored it. Zero homeless, zero trash. Now, I just went there 2 weeks ago and walked the entire thing, went to every dirt road, and to this day, not one homeless person and enough trash to fill one bag, which shows we were successful because we sent the word, you don't get to do this here because this is a space for everybody.
Now, that can be effective when you just say the word is out, don't come here. I mean, just to some extent, do these encampments happen because somebody who's homeless looks around for a place to set up camp and they set up near or next to somebody else who's already doing it? And if you make it clear that it's off limits, that can work.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Like I've always said, one good camper attracts 10 bad campers because you always get the neighbor saying, actually, he's a really nice guy. He's really trying. And we all get that, right? But unfortunately, if you allow it in public to be seen, it attracts 10 others and then 20, then 50. That's the problem. Is so you have to really be strict with everybody, help everybody who's ready for change, but definitely enforce the people who are not ready for change.
Okay,
that's the only way you're ever going to do it.
So, Kevin, what else do these cities need to do? Because I've felt for a long time that all Oregon and Washington have done is roll out the red carpet. I mean, they're spending stratospheric amounts of money. I mean, Multnomah County's $700 million in a single year on a population that numbers below 10,000. Puget Sound and Seattle and King County spending over $1 billion a year, again, on a very small population, while telling the rest of the legitimate residents who pay the taxes and do the work and all that, you're not going to get the city services you have that you expect because we're short of cash. And nobody seems to be willing to ask the question, well, why don't you stop spending $700 million on a few thousand people, and then you'll have enough for police and fire and everything else. Somehow
Seriously.
They feel as though it's an obligation to spend these crazy amounts of money.
Yeah, I say stop treating the homeless like a protected class. These are adults. They're actually very intelligent. Most actually, I believe, possess common sense if just given the right direction. And most really, I think, want to be self-sufficient if given that responsibility. But they are not. They are enabled to the point of dependency. And dependency is profit. And that's kind of what I've always said is what the homeless industrial complex is all about. They don't want to solve the problem because if they do, they work themselves out of a job. As far as to answer your question, Portland is a sanctuary city. Seattle, San Francisco, they are sanctuary cities. People know to go there because the homeless know they will be left alone to do what they want to do. What we did differently in Gresham is we just sent the word, we are not a sanctuary city. We are still compassionate. We want to help you. We will do everything we can to help you, but you don't get to do this. Absolutely, very strict, no. So we were very big on the cleanups because a homeless person will oftentimes camp near an area or a neighborhood where they said, well, obviously nobody cares because look at this mess. But it's the perfect example why you don't see like a homeless tent in downtown Lake Oswego, right? Yep. It's because everybody in a heartbeat would notice it and everybody would approach it and be like, yeah, this isn't going to work for us, right?
Okay.
But in Portland, it's everywhere.
But so, Kevin, is it just a lack of backbone, or is it that all these people are such, and I have to say it, bleeding heart liberals who say, oh, yeah, making this person not camp here would be unkind. Making them clean up, that would be cruel. And that, and while they're willing to go out and swack, you know, one of the property owners and say, $500 a day, buddy, or we're going to put a lien on your property and eventually we'll take it away. They're happy to go out and hammer on citizens and then turn around and say, but for all these homeless people, they get a break from all the rules and they somehow think that's compassionate.
Well, yeah, and basically what they have convinced everybody is that the homeless are this protected class. We have to walk on eggshells. We have to be very careful how we talk to them. If you see my videos, I talk to them like real people. If they're annoying, I'm going to say something. If they're crossing a line, I'm going to say something, right? This is what they respond to. They don't need to be treated like children. So, yeah, it is a backbone issue. And also, we need to rethink what a homeless person actually is. They are, in many ways, just like you and I, but just on the streets with possibly addiction issues, right?
No job, no income, no tax obligations, yep, no obligation to provide your own home or food or anything. Like the lady you talked to the other day, who was saying to you, I'm kind of a privileged class. I'm not like what she called civilians. You folks all have to get up early in the morning, go to work all day, only get weekends off. I get to go and party all day long. And it almost sounded like she was entitled to that because she'd been led to believe that she was.
Yeah, tons of entitlement, you know, I mean, and do you blame them? I mean, I've always said this, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. Blame the system that created these people, right? Because within a system where you enable them to the point of dependency, of course they're going to act this way, right? But let's look deeper at who are these people creating this mess. And it's the ones that actually think the homeless are like hands off and we can't ever say anything to them or hold them accountable. And it's just, I'm so done with this. So, like, what I said is, like, look, just because they're homeless doesn't mean they're not going to listen to direction, how to be empowered, and really, they're kind of just looking for that structure and direction, but they're not getting it.
Absolutely right. That's Kevin Dahlgren. You can find what he writes on the Substack known as Truth on the Streets with Kevin Dahlgren. Kevin, thanks very much. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up on the Radio Northwest Network, is Christian school the best choice for the children of gay couples whose lifestyle
Some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. By the way, a little update. About 3 weeks from now, the Oregon legislature will have a special session because 6 months of those jokers down in Salem, even with the Democrats holding a supermajority that allows them to vote through any crazy thing they want to do, and they said no to a $15 billion tax increase for transportation over the next 10 years. They also said no to a $2 billion tax increase. So now, today, Governor Kotek has released the details of her latest tax increase that she is proposing. She wants to raise the state's gas tax by 6 cents. That'd be about a 15% increase in gas taxes. She wants to increase car registration fees by more than $40. She wants to increase title fees by $139 and then double the payroll tax for transit. All this is crazy. Drivers of electric vehicles would also have to get hit with a $30 additional charge. And this is her plan to save ODOT from its own destruction. If you like it, I'd be glad to hear why. If you hate it, I know. I'm with you on that one. In any case, glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. This segment of the show comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. And our X poll question today, this has to do with President Trump's announcement on Truth Social. People who are in our country illegally will not be counted in the census. And he is telling the Commerce Department he wants them to start a new census that would not count illegal aliens when it counts Americans. The X poll, should America hold another census to count only those who are here legally? I would answer yes to that. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Neary in Seattle. Hey, Neary, thanks for listening on the network and on KVI. What's on your mind?
I have a question regarding the Seattle law that happened. If they are failing in providing the sole responsibility of any municipality and its security for its own citizen, why are we paying taxes? What for?
That's a great question. I know you're asking that somewhat rhetorically, but I agree with you. And in fact, Neary, what I'm kind of hoping, I don't know whether this would work legally because I'm not a lawyer, but can you imagine walking into court and saying to the judge, Your Honor, I'd like a temporary injunction on any fines the city wants to write for this kind of thing, clean up the homeless camps, because the city has encouraged this kind of encampment. They have aided and abetted this kind of encampment. I don't know if Seattle's done what Multnomah County and Portland have done. Multnomah County gave away literally 100,000 tents and tarps, and then they claim they're not part of the problem. I'd be surprised if Seattle hasn't done something similar. So if you made the case to the judge, when the city itself creates the problem, do they then get to turn around and say, now that we've created the problem on your land, Mr. Property Owner, Mrs. Property Owner, you have to pay us a bunch of fines? I would hope there'd be some judge sensible enough to say, you're right, we're putting a TRO on those fines, and they can't do it until they correct what's creating the problem.
Is that by definition the case for RICO, creating a problem and providing the service or whatever it is?
The problem with RICO is racketeering and corrupt organizations. And while I do think that governments in the Northwest are corrupt, I don't know that you can make a case to the judge that they're corrupt enough to fit under RICO, but it's an interesting idea. And if any lawyer wants to do that, I'd be glad to promote their activities. If they say, yep, I'm going to go to the city of Seattle, I'm going to sue on behalf of property owners, I'm going to say when the city creates a problem, they don't get to turn around. It'd be like having the city put its foot on your gas pedal as you're driving down the road and then writing you a ticket for speeding. Let's go to Stu. Hey, Stu, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, love your show. I just wanted to mention out that now the city is passing a law that says that you have to clean up whatever the homeless does to you. But like you said, they're not really enforcing any kind of law enforcement there. Yet here's something for you. The state is enforcing on you, or the city is enforcing on you, something that they don't observe themselves. Because if you drive down the freeway, you drive down some of these roads where the city owns the property, you see graffiti that they do not clean up. They refuse to clean up. But if it was you, they'd be charging you X amount of dollars a day to do it. Appreciate the show. Thanks.
And by the way, thank you, Stu, for that. Can you imagine if somebody said, I'm going to go out and find every single piece of city property that does not meet the definition they've set for all the private property owners, and then I'm going to file complaints with the city department that writes those tickets and say, we want you to write the city up for the same kind of thing that they're writing up private property owners for. They can either live by their own set of rules, or they need to take the rules off the books or suspend them altogether. By the way, I do want to mention this. The Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, in this case, not the Times, but the Oregon Live folks, they wrote this boo-hoo story about a pair of lesbians who have a child, and the child was going to a Catholic school in Portland. And then the Catholic school, Reverend Father Luan Tran, the priest in charge, said, you know what, you're a same-sex couple, your kids are no longer welcome to enroll in school this fall. Now, to some extent, that makes sense to me. An awful lot of parents put their kids in Christian schools, in this case, a Catholic school, and they say, we want the better education that's subsidized by the religious organization, but we don't follow the religion. If you've got parents whose own lifestyle directly contradicts with Christian teachings, which it does, why in the world, number one, would the parents want their kid in that school? And number two, why in the world would the schools set up that kind of problematic situation? I think what the schools did in this case was absolutely appropriate. And you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment. But first, I don't know whether or not Bob Ferguson, governor of Washington, and Tina Kotek, governor of Oregon, I don't know whether or not they sense the deep irony in this, but both of the states, they talk a great game about preserving farmland. They say, oh, we can't let people build houses. That would wipe out farms. We can't do this because we have to protect farms. I mean, they talk a great game about protecting farmers. And then, having protected them, the states of Oregon and Washington seem to have gone to war with farmers, and between taxes and employment regulations and everything else, they're wiping out farms left and right. And a reporter who's been covering that is Carlene Johnson. She covers those kinds of issues for the Center Square as one of their staff reporters. Carlene, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Lars. Kind of sad between, you know, economic hardship, hard enough to be beholden to Mother Nature as a farmer, rancher. Then you add on the astronomical impact of fuel prices, property taxes, and then, of course, here in Washington, and I know Oregon's much the same, regulations that, you know, on these ranchers, the growers, and mind you, these are the ones that are trying to ensure we have a U.S.-based, you know, food supply we can count on when the world comes to a screeching halt. It's just too much on so many of them. We're losing two farms a day in the state of Washington, and we have been for 5 years and running.
So we're talking about total, as you detail in your story, 3,700 farms lost in the 5 years between 2017 and 2022. And a lot of your story deals with something that's really dark and grim, because I think most of us assume, well, for those people who still have family farms, we imagine this bucolic lifestyle, a hard lifestyle, but one where you get up early, you're with, you know, nature and animals, and you do something really productive, you're feeding the country. You would think you'd find that very, very rewarding, but a disturbing number of farmers go out and take their own lives, don't they?
It is horrible, and it's something that there's a couple of Washington state lawmakers, and specifically Rep. Tom Dent, who's from Moses Lake and is a farmer himself. I got to tell you, just personally, one of the most likable, down-to-earth, amazing lawmakers serving his constituents that I've met so far in the Washington state legislature. But, you know, he has been all over this because these are his neighbors. And we already have a higher, suicide rate in the state of Washington, consistently above the national average. But then when it comes to the suicide rate for agricultural workers in the state, it's 21 per 100,000 people compared to 14.9 per 100,000 for the state's general population. And you want to talk about, like you said, this, you know, beautiful, you know, idyllic lifestyle that you can imagine. But we already know, you know, the rest of us that work 8 or maybe 10 hour work days on the hard days, the farmers are working, you know, 12 hour days regularly, 16 hours a day during, you know, crop season. I mean, these guys have everything on top of them, and yet we continue to shove regulations down their throat that are making it impossible for them to even make a living. For crying out loud, I just mentioned Representative Tom Dent. He, this year, for the first time ever, had to rent out half of his farmland to somebody else to you know, make a living. And he said if he had not decided to, you know, do anything on his property in the last 2 years, he could have broke even. Instead, he's losing money. He's losing money. And this guy knows.
He actually lost money by farming. And if he had just said, I'm not going to turn on the water pumps, I'm not going to irrigate, I'm not going to plant anything, he'd have made more money or lost less money by doing that than by actually putting crops in the ground.
100%. And the young man that he introduced me to that has rented out some of his farmland this year, that guy is struggling as well, but he's young and he's putting in those 16-hour days I just referenced, because these are people that care about what they do. They love the animals, they love the earth, they love working outside, they love working with their hands, and they, you know, have this incredible work ethic that, frankly, a lot of people in Western Washington don't even have any understanding of. But if we don't stop putting further regulations on these guys, like 200-foot, you know, buffers for anything close to a stream, regulating every year and changing regulations every year on what kinds of chemicals they can put on their crops, how much they get for a barrel, and then you add tariffs, they're going to be a whole other burden on them. We're going to just push more and more of them out of this way of life. And it's already just a devastating impact for central and eastern Washington. I know you're facing it in Oregon as well, Lars. It's so sad.
Let me ask you this, though, because there are things that could be done immediately that would give them some relief. And I'll give you one example. The law on the Climate Commitment Act that added a carbon tax to all fuel, gasoline, diesel, propane, natural gas, that had a specific carve out that said you don't charge it to farmers. You don't charge it to people in agriculture who burn up hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of gallons of fuel every year to do what they do. And so they're not interested in wasting the fuel, but they were, you know, the Department of Ag at the state at the state level was told you don't charge that CCA tax to the farmers. And then they claimed under Inslee, we're too busy to figure out how not to charge the farmers, so we went ahead and charged them anyway. That alone could be one burden taken off by just following the damn law. Is anybody, Ferguson or the Democrats who run things back in Olympia, are they doing anything to even try and give the farmers that kind of relief?
It finally happened this year. You're right. It took 3 years past the promise that was made, and Representative Tom Dent fought for 3 years. Finally, this legislative session was able to get Governor Ferguson to sign that into law to make it easier for them to get the exemption. Lars, they made it so difficult that these farmers who, you know, they're not the kind of guys that want to fight bureaucracy. They don't want to fill out 19 forms of paperwork to get, you know, $8 back for the 10 I spent, right? I mean, they're not the kind of guys that do that. They don't have the time, effort, energy to do it. So most of them just threw their hands up and said, screw it, I'm not going to bother. But Dent went back and made it much more simplified for them to ensure that when they go in, whether it's one of their farm employees filling up his truck at the local grocery station, you know, diesel fill up because he's going to come and use that truck on the property for farming purposes, or it's filling up your tractor, they've streamlined it this year. It's finally happening. It's 3 years late, and at this point, there's no reimbursement for these guys who got screwed out of 3 years what they were promised.
Okay, so is there anything else quickly in the last 30 seconds that could be done for them right now to take some of that pressure off?
Well, there is a whole bunch that's going to come from this report. I would recommend folks go to thecentersquare.com and look at the article. It goes to this full report that came out from the Washington Ag Department that looked into what's happening, what the burdens are, and what the takeaways should be. And Dent has assured me he's got partners across the aisle that want to work with him. And in the meantime, you know, the Farm Aid hotline, which is 1-800-FARM-AID, that's a resource for farmers who are really struggling, because that mental health aspect is hugely important. I know we kind of overlook it and think these guys are just bucking up Buttercup, but they're really struggling.
It sounds like it. Carlene Johnson, you can read the entire piece she wrote for thecentersquare.com. Carlene, thanks very much. Coming up in just a moment, should any public official who tips off illegal aliens to ICE raids, should they face prosecution by the federal government? That's next in your phone calls.
Constantine Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gates. We were wrong. They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters. At least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And you know what? My entire career as a reporter, as a talk show host, I love questions. I think questions are the best way to get to the heart of almost any issue. Only lately, the kinds of issues that present themselves seem to leave you with questions that have obvious answers. And I kind of hate questions that have obvious answers. But let me ask you this one anyway. Should any public official who tips off illegal aliens that they are about to be raided by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, should that public official who tipped off the illegals face prosecution? Now, I think who would answer no to that? Who would say, no, no, that's a perfectly legitimate thing for a state or federal official to do? And yet we've got examples of it. I'm going to give you one of them. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your calls. And we'll do that in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. By the way, if you happen to be a naysayer, we love naysayers on the show. For more than a quarter century, we've always put naysayers in the number one spot. So you go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Our X poll today, should America hold another census and then count only those who are legally in America? In other words, you count citizens, you count green card holders, you count the people who are here legally, you don't count the illegal aliens. That is exactly what President Trump declared just hours ago on Truth Social. He said people who are in our country illegally will not be counted in the census. He went to all caps, so you know he's serious. He said he's going to order the Commerce Department to start a new census that would take the unprecedented step of excluding illegal aliens from its count. Well, that's a bit unprecedented. I might point out the census has counted people differently as they did quite some time ago in the early 1800s. They did not count everybody in the country. So it's not true, oh, we've never done that before. Yes, of course you have. Anyway, you can find the X poll question at Lars Larson Show on X. You can find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. So what do we have? A young lady by the name of Annalise Ortiz. She is a state senator in Arizona. She is also, and I know you won't be surprised by this, she's a member of the Democrat Party. Well, now Arizona Republicans are saying there ought to be a federal investigation into what she did. This Senator Annalise Ortiz. And why? Because apparently she tipped off the Hispanic community, you know, the ones that she shares a common heritage with. She tipped them off that there was about to be an ICE operation and that they would have people arrested. They say it's the latest case of a left winger spouting incendiary rhetoric about ICE, which has seen an 830% increase in assaults. Now, I know the left has been making a big deal out of the fact, well, we have these secret police. They have their faces covered. You know, somehow the left in America, Democrats and liberals and the rest of that so-called progressives, they don't have any problem with Antifa or Trantifa or BLM or any of the other lunatic groups who've been staging riots over the last 5 years, who've been actually burning cities down, who've been involved in murders and assaults and everything else. They don't have a problem with them wearing masks. But when you have a gigantic increase in assaults on ICE officers, and so ICE agents working for the federal government enforcing federal law under the jurisdiction of federal law and under the guidance at times of the federal courts, all of a sudden they have a problem with those law enforcement people covering up their faces so that they and their families will not be doxxed out by a bunch of liberal lunatics out there. Fact is that Annalise Ortiz says, well, the Democrats are actively impeding and doxing immigration officials. Well, yeah, they have been. Ortiz said, yeah, when ICE is around, I will alert my community to stay out of the area. I'm not, and then she used a word I can't use on the radio, I'm not blanking scared of you or Trump's masked goons. This is a state senator who was elected by actual voters in the state of Arizona. Esther Winnie, who is executive assistant to the United States attorney, told the left-leaning Arizona Mirror that her office was aware of the Senate president's request and will review it. So the Senate president of the Senate in the state of Arizona is saying, you've got to investigate this lefty lunatic. In a tirade on Instagram, here's what Ortiz said. Fascists and white supremacists in power in Arizona are targeting her because she shared information about ICE lurking outside of an elementary school so that our community could avoid the area and stay safe. ICE is lurking outside schools, disappearing people of all statuses. Well, they're not disappearing. They're being picked up because there's probable cause to believe that they're committing the crime of being in the United States illegally. And she says it's causing unwarranted fear. I want to ask you something somewhat rhetorically, and that is, do you think anybody who's an actual citizen of the United States has to live in fear? Do you suppose anybody with a legitimate green card, which if you're a green card holder, I don't know how many people know this detail, you're required to have that green card on you at all times when you're away from home, because you have to identify that you're legally in the United States. Do you suppose any of those people have unwarranted fear that they're going to be picked up and disappeared by ICE agents? The fact is, Trisha McLaughlin, who is Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security, told Ortiz, said that Ortiz's conduct, quote, looks like obstruction of justice. You know, Tom Homan made that promise last year before Donald Trump was reelected, thank God. And he said, if we find that local officials are going to stand up and actively obstruct the enforcement of federal law, they will be charged with crimes. We've seen judges charged. We've seen others charged. And I know that the left is running around saying it's like being in a dictatorship. Really? If it's like being in a dictatorship, why did Trump have to work so hard to get the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill or the passage of a meager $9 billion rescissions bill? Why is it that he's followed the federal laws that are on the books, and now that he's actually enforcing those laws and insisting that people not attack ICE agents or dox their families, all of a sudden he's some kind of dictator? That's absolutely crazy. Glad to have you with me on a Thursday. Let me go to Angie. Hey, Angie, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Lars. I love what you do.
Thank you, ma'am.
So here in Whatcom County, and a lot of people don't know this, we have a Boxberry Farm. It's a property that's about 58-plus acres.
Uh-huh.
It's being purchased by the Whatcom Agricultural Research Research Station. And the people who are buying this is actually the Port of Bellingham. The Port of Bellingham is buying property in Ferndale from the Boxberry owners, and it's crazy because
what are they
going to?
What are they?
Angie,
have they said what they plan to do with that property?
That's it. They're making it a Whatcom Agricultural Research Station. So they're going to hire a bunch of people to go in there and do a bunch of research. Now I'm assuming it's a genetically modified berry or a berry that produces more fruit to feed more people. I don't know. That one's above my pay grade. But all I know is we taxpayers are going to be on the hook for about $3 million worth of property from the Port of Bellingham that's bought in Ferndale.
And let me add something to your argument, Angie. The minute that's purchased by a state agency, it no longer pays property taxes. You got the property taxes on $3 million that's not going to go to the county or the city or any other jurisdiction. That's another hit to the taxpayers, too.
The Lars Larson Show. Ronald Reagan knew better. Do you?
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You know, again, I've got to complain about the fact that I'm being forced to ask questions that seem to have their own answer. Since we use so much of the stuff, should America be producing its own copper? Now, do we have the best technology in the world for it? Yep. Do we have the mines? Sure. We got the place to mine it. We have the technological capability. We've got the capital. We've got the know-how. And are we actually doing it? I thought I'd put that question to Larry Behrens, who works with a group called Power the Future. Larry, welcome back. And wouldn't you think it'd be obvious that a big, powerful technological country like America, that needs copper for not just the lines to transmit all that ridiculous wind power and solar panel power, but for all the other things that we put copper into, that we'd be producing our own instead of being dependent on foreign imports?
Yeah, absolutely, Lars. Great to talk with you. It just goes down to self-reliance, doesn't it? Do we want to depend on others who sometimes are adversarial with us for the things that we absolutely need, or do we want to depend on ourselves? I think the answer is clear, but not always if you follow the green agenda.
Well, and in fact, one of the things that's kind of crazy is the biggest object in the way of mining copper in America, where we've mined literally billions of tons of the stuff over the years. I've been to some old retired copper mines like, Jerome down in Arizona on the side of a mountain where they pulled out, 1.4 billion tons of copper. I mean, amazing amounts of the stuff. And yet it gets gobbled up very fast. And these days, probably faster than ever before because of electric cars and electric this and electric that. And you've got environmental groups that say, no, you can't do that. We're going to block you. We're going to make it more expensive. We're going to set up all these regulations. But if you want to go do that dirty stuff in some other country and maybe even use slaves to get the work done, like China, go ahead and do it that way. I mean, I don't understand how the left-wing groups that get in the way of mining our own copper can say it's okay to use slaves in another country and pollute some other country. Just don't do it here.
Well, exactly. I mean, and this issue hits home. I mean, I grew up in southwest New Mexico. My grandfather was a copper miner. Copper mining has been in the family for a long time. And when you look at these groups that are doing the things just as you described, you have to ask yourself, okay, they demand we buy these products that have copper in them, but then they demand that we don't get it here. And so it's easy to just say, oh, well, they're just not smart, or laugh it up to they're just bumbling. No, it's absolutely intentional. You have to ask, are these groups being funded by foreign powers who are getting our billions because of all these, products that they're forcing us to buy?
Well, and in fact, Larry, one of the questions, and it kind of goes outside of this lane, but it goes into the other lane. We were talking last week about the fact that TikTok has now said, hey, we're going to have our own version of community notes, you know, like you have on Meta and on X. Yeah, they're going to call it something else, but it's so we can fight misinformation. And I told my audience, I said, this is a great way for a foreign power like China to be able to influence American public opinion. Because if you can go on social media, and right now TikTok does not reach me, I won't have anything to do with it, nor will my family. But on TikTok, they say, we're just going to correct misinformation. What a terrific way for the Chinese Communist government of Beijing to say, we're going to correct misinformation. Oh, that those environmental groups, they're right on. The copper mining, that's evil. In other words, they can tilt American public opinion very readily from one direction to another direction, which has not just political consequences, but consequences for things like this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Information is weaponized, and they are weaponizing it through social media. And when you consider the number of, I won't just say young people, but a lot of people who rely on social media, particularly TikTok, for their news, it is absolutely an information weapon of the CCP. And it becomes something that we just let in our own homes, right? And maybe it's not even such a thing as community notes. Maybe it's these environmental groups have a point, and it gets us fighting and has us deny facts that we all know are true. And that is in the service of the Chinese Communist Party. And so I agree. It's not on my phone. It's not on my kid's phone. It shouldn't really be on anyone's phone.
No, it shouldn't be, because I don't think people, I mean, look, would I realize that I was being manipulated if I mean, because I'm on computers and social media all day long, just not on TikTok. But if I see that the, you know, the convention, the wisdom on, you know, whatever social media things being talked about, this is good or this is bad. All of us have to know that you're picking up that vibe going one direction or another. Gee, everybody says this is bad. Maybe it's bad. You know, and so I wonder, can President Trump, in his America First approach to this, can he actually get this stuff done and get America back to producing the essential materials that we have to have to run this society?
I hope so, because it is a ship that does not turn around quickly. He's on the way, right? I mean, just today, the Interior Department announced that they expedited a coal application so that we can start making coal here. But these are elements that are essential to our way of life. And I'm not just talking about comfort. I'm talking about our defense. We saw the story last week where China cut off critical minerals to the United States that we use for night vision goggles for our military. If you don't control your own supply chains, then you're subjecting yourself to manipulation. And we see that with energy, we see that with critical minerals, and we see that with a whole bunch of things. And anyone who stands up and says, you know what, we should be relying on foreign powers for this, does not have an America First agenda in their heart. But to your point, it takes time, because we got a lot of work to undo.
Well, and how much of this has to be something where the Congress has to pass a law to make it happen? And how much of it is under the control, say, of federal agencies like EPA and other agencies that can say, we'll undo these regulations and we'll make it possible to economically get copper out of the ground?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say a lot of it right now is doable in regulations. In fact, it's almost always doable in regulations. But the problem with that is, if Congress doesn't pass a bill, the next president comes in and just undoes it, right? We had a president during the last term who had a green slush fund and spent a record amount of money on Chinese-made products. And so I'm sure Beijing was happy with that, and I'm glad it stopped under President Trump. But if Congress doesn't pass something, you know, putting it aside and saying we will depend on our own supply lines, that the next president can really mess it up again.
Okay, and I agree with you there, but and the other problem is this, Larry. If somebody went to a company, say a company that's involved in mining, and said, we'd like you to go out and start mining copper again, great. Will you give it a, get us some areas to actually do it in? Yes. You can buy them. You'll pay the lease fees and all that, but we'll let it happen. If that company says, we're going to have to sink, you know, $10 billion into starting this operation, but in 3 years it could all go sideways when the next president comes in, they're not going to want to drop that kind of money on a project that could be shut down in 3 years. They need some kind of certainty, don't they?
They absolutely do, but I can give them that certainty. Why don't they do what a Chinese copper mining company did and just get Hunter Biden to organize the deal? I mean, that literally happened, right, in Africa. Hunter Biden, energy expert Hunter Biden, was at the center of a deal removing a copper mine from an American company production to Chinese production, because I'm sure he's such an energy expert, and they didn't mind putting the money behind that. But you're pointing exactly right. We see it with Keystone XL, and we see it, these things that take a lot of years and a lot of money to produce, and if Washington can pull the rug out from under you in a heartbeat, then people just don't want to, you know, invest their money in that direction. And so we laugh at the Hunter Biden situation, but that's how that company guaranteed it got done. You have to pay off the insider, and that's exactly what they did.
You know what? I think you may be onto something, Larry, because imagine this. When Hunter Biden lobbied for foreign governments, he was supposed to register as a foreign agent, you know, Foreign Agent Registration Act. But he can get mine. I understand he's kind of hard up. His paintings aren't selling nearly as well as they did before Joe Biden left the office. And he needs the money. And if he was actually lobbying on behalf of American companies in America, he wouldn't have to register as a foreign agent, would he?
I think any Democrat who would come and say, hey, we're going to question this mining activity, we'd have to ask, well, you were perfectly fine with it when he was running it for China. Why not with America? See, I think we're onto something here. We're in a foolproof plan.
That is the foolproof plan. Hire Hunter. That's Larry Behrens. He's with a group called Power the Future. And the question is, if we've got our own copper and we know how to get it out of the ground and refine it, why isn't America producing its own essential rare materials or materials? You've got the Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. I want to talk food stamps and your calls next.
told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Something bizarre is going on in Northeast Portland at this time. A series of chain reaction crashes that resulted in one fatality and apparently a number of people taken to the hospital. Police are saying that all of the crashes seem to be somehow related. If somebody had eyes on that, I would love to hear a direct first, you know, eyewitness view of what happened. John Bryant, a TriMet bus driver at the time of this, said he saw somebody drive onto a sidewalk in an SUV at around 70 miles an hour, hit a pedestrian, and he kept on going and never slowed down. He's 69 years old, told Oregon Live that the car then hit and killed another pedestrian. They describe it as blood everywhere. If somebody had eyes on and saw what happened today, call me up at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. We serve the Pacific Northwest region of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Glad to get your calls. By the way, there are so many other issues going on right now. Let me jump to some calls first. And if you want to jump in, and if we have any eyewitnesses to that horrific crash that apparently sent one person to the morgue and at least several people to the hospital, love to get your calls. Let's go to John. John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, before I get to what really angers me, the other day you talked about PERS. I was thinking 15 years ago, if they would have put the PERS funds into Bitcoin, they probably could fund the general fund.
They probably could, except that wouldn't that be the same thing that has cost them millions of dollars already, putting something in a very high-risk proposition, and then when they lose, the people who actually made the investment decisions don't lose anything, but the taxpayers lose everything?
Right now, they've got a high theft situation. Anyways, what makes me angry is this governor that let this guy out of prison.
Jesse Lee Calhoun.
And I personally knew one of the women that he killed.
Oh, my God.
And I was, she stayed at my house for a while, and I tried to help her out. But anyways, I was thinking, could maybe an initiative petition be put into place that would make someone like the governor have to submit herself to public humiliation for screwing up?
I doubt it, but you know what should do that, John, without even passing a law or signing a petition? What should do that is when politicians make colossal errors like that. And that was a knowing error. That wasn't just a quick judgment call that had to be made. She sat down, Kate Brown did, and she made the decision to cut that guy's sentence down dramatically. Now, he was going to stay in prison. I think his sentence was 4 years. He was allowed to get out early. And then within a short period of time, about a year or so, the police say that he began this killing spree that he is accused of. He's not convicted of it, but he's accused of killing at least four young women. Now, ordinarily, when somebody makes a colossal bad decision, not a mistake, but a bad decision, that they would come out and have to say something to the public. But you know who would have to force that politician to say something? That would be the cartel media, the mainstream media. I mean, and it's funny because the media kind of picks and chooses. I mean, even in TV news, when I worked in TV news, you'd say, this person really needs to answer this question. We're going to show up everywhere they go, and we're going to beleaguer them with this question until we get an answer. That whole meme of the media has disappeared because you see people making terrible institutional decisions like that. Sometimes it costs somebody a life, and then they're never called to account. And I would think that reporters would want to go to them and say, look, you made this judgment call. This guy got out early. He is now accused of committing some horrific crimes. How do you answer that? And you're not seeing it. Now, they'll dog Trump all day long.
Here's where I'd like to try, I'd like to try to figure out a way to eliminate this picking and choosing. And I'd really like to see these people forced to have to face like a town hall and be humiliated and apologize for their screwing up.
I'd like to see it too, but John, do you know what would do it? I'll tell you about a politician. Gosh, if I can remember, he was the Multnomah County chief executive, and he was a reasonably nice guy. But he did something that I've very rarely seen politicians do. He had what he called his once-a-week Wednesday morning availability. And what that meant was he'd sit in his office, and he was still doing paperwork or whatever it was he was doing that was involved in his job. But for half an hour, once a week, might have even been an hour, but it was at least half an hour, any reporter who wanted to could walk in, sit down, and ask him a question. Now, I did that any number of times on various stories. And there were times where his office would be packed to the gills with the reporters because something hot was going on. And there were other times where I'd walk in by myself, set up a microphone or set up a camera, and he'd be there all by himself, and I'd ask all the questions I wanted, no other reporters around. But if every politician, maybe the governor couldn't do it once a week, the governor could certainly do it once a month, might even be able to do it once a week. If once a week or once a month, the governor, the mayor, and I'm talking about both Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, if they all said, I will make myself available for any and all questions at least once a week or once a month, then those questions would be asked. Because reporters would think, well, what should we check in with the governor or the mayor or the county executive about? Those people insulate themselves from the public so well and the media as well, they don't want to answer those questions, so they never make themselves available unless it's scripted and prepared and carefully controlled. John, thanks for the call.
The Lars Larson.
15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on what we like to call Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I'll be glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment, but first, I want to talk with our friend Cully Stimson, Senior Legal Fellow for Heritage, Manager at the National Security Law Program, and co-author, along with the great Zach Smith, of the book called Rogue Prosecutors, How Radical Soros Lawyers Are Destroying America's Communities. Although, as I welcome Cully, I'm tempted to ask, now that so many of those rogue prosecutors have now either been pushed out of office by the voters or have left of their own accord, Cully, are you going to have to write an annex to that book?
Happy to. Unfortunately, there's about 70 more. They're not really household names, but they're still doing the same kind of terrible policy and damage across this country. So until they're all out of office, we'll keep writing books.
Fair enough. Would you mind telling my audience about Ed Fulner?
Yeah. So I knew Ed Fulner for half of his adult life and all of my adult life. He was born in 41. He died this year. He was the founder of the Heritage Foundation. And I know that people hear about the Heritage Foundation, but they really don't understand the story of that. He put together a business plan with Paul Weyrich in 1973 when he was a staffer on the Hill and gave that to Joe Coors, because they wanted an alternative to the Brookings Institution and AEI think tank to really get short, readable, factual policy papers in the hands of legislators immediately before legislation was considered. They got $225,000 from Joseph Coors in 73. They founded Heritage. Ed became the president of Heritage in 77, and he was president until 2012 when he retired the first time. I've been his chief of staff twice. The first time I was his chief of staff for his last 2 years, the Library of Congress wanted 1 million of his personal papers, professional papers, letters, et cetera, for their historical purposes. I think Heritage is best known, Lars, and you know this, because in 1980, when Governor Reagan was the nominee to become the president, Heritage created the Mandate for Leadership, which was a 1,000-page policy manual on how to reform the government should a common sense person occupy the White House. And Reagan put a copy of Mandate for Leadership on the chair of every single cabinet nominee for his first cabinet hearing and said, this is the playbook for us. So that's how Heritage got on the map. And that was all Ed Fulner.
Does it still work as a policy manual today? And by the way, maybe we can speak to 2025, which I don't know. I tried to understand the issue. I tried to explain it to my audience, but maybe you can speak to that as well.
Yeah. So every 4 years, more or less, Heritage pulls together hundreds of scholars across domestic and foreign policy, and they put together recommendations for any administration coming in, Democrat or Republican. We don't care. We're not partisan. But they're conservative ideas because Ed believed deeply in seeing everyone's potential in human flourishing. And he believed that conservative policy ideas at every level, if implemented, increases human flourishing. And so Project 2025, the much maligned product that was produced by Heritage last year, was just the latest in the Mandate for Leadership series. It's just rebranded and had a couple other pillars, including that we published it a year and a half before there was even an election. Normally, you just hand it out to any nominee of either party after they secure the nomination. You don't put it online. So that's the only difference. But that started with Ed in 1980 with the Mandate for Leadership product.
Well, and did it surprise you that there were so many people who got wound up, or was this just a way for the America's political left to say, we don't like these ideas, so we'll turn it into kind of a boogeyman, to the point where even the president said, look, I've got no connection to it, which was factually true. But I mean, I read most of it, and I thought, I don't really have a problem with these ideas. And I found that most of the reporters who talked about it would talk about it as this idea, the boogeyman. But if you said, well, what's actually in it that bothers you? They'd say, well, you know, that's all the details. They couldn't tell you what was actually in it. They just knew it had been turned into something that was evil, and therefore they didn't want any connection to it.
Yeah. The left really did a great job weaponizing it for political purposes. But to your point, if you actually read it, you know, we talk about, for example, that punitive tax policies affects human behavior, and we should give the federal government the least amount of taxes to do their core duties. We talk about welfare reform. We talk about entitlement reform. We talk about a strong military and peace strength. So these are the same conservative ideas updated over time that we've done, you know, every 4 years, more or less. And so I didn't really see hardly any substantive critique of the policies in Project 2025. That's because they didn't read it. They just weaponized it and repeated the claims from the left. And I don't think any nominee, much less former President Trump, is going to sit there and wade through 1,000 pages because when you're running from campaign to campaign stop, you're not reading deep policy papers. So I'm not surprised he didn't read it.
Do you think that that Ed Fulner would approve of where Heritage sits today?
I know he would. I was Ed's son's high school teacher in the 80s, Lars, and I stayed in touch with him ever since. When I was in the Bush administration as Deputy Assistant Defense Secretary, Ed and I spent a lot of time together. When I was an Assistant U.S. Attorney, we spent a lot of time together. I dined with their family. I was his Chief of Staff, not only the first time he tried to retire, but after he came back as the interim president when Senator DeMint left, I was his Chief of Staff again. And I was at his hospital bed the week before he died. Ed knows that to be relevant, you have to hire really smart, really well-read, thoughtful conservatives, and you have to stay with the times. And so Ed was also a person who didn't call shots from the sidelines. He was very old school. So when he left the presidency the first time, he had a little minor office over in another building that Heritage owns, but he didn't call shots from the sidelines. He didn't criticize either Senator DeMint or Kay Coles James when she was the president. And he certainly didn't do that to Kevin Roberts because he's old school. And he served on the board of Heritage. So I know he supports Heritage's policy. He did pen an op-ed with Vice President Mike Pence recently before he died and talked about the sort of need to get back to the conservative nature of the Republican Party and that populism serves a point, but it doesn't get you everywhere where conservatism does. But that's more of a doctrinal debate within the center right and the right versus criticism of populism.
I guess I'm worried about where we're going because the Democrat Party seems to be falling apart, and you'd think I'd applaud that, but I also think there's a constructive tension between conservatives and liberals, and yet the liberals lately seem to have lost their minds.
Yeah. Look, the Americans don't want boys and girls bathrooms, and the Americans don't want boys playing in girls' sports. And, you know, Trump and the Republicans and conservatives and libertarians are right on these 80-20 issues. And the Democrats are engaged in a delightful circular firing squad. It's fun to watch it happen. This is figuratively speaking, of course.
Of course. Cully Stimson is the author of Rogue Prosecutors, senior legal fellow at Heritage, and he knew Ed Folner well. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. When I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. So why would the President of the United States, Donald Trump, demand on social media the CEO of Intel must resign immediately? There is no other solution to this problem. I'm going to give you what I think is the answer to that coming up in a moment. And it actually makes all kinds of sense why Donald Trump would make that kind of demand. He says that the CEO of Intel, one of the earliest technology companies in America, founded in 1968, it became a giant. I mean, they make chips. They are one of the biggest producers of integrated circuit chips in the United States. Now, worldwide, the United States only produces about 10% of the integrated circuits. Many of the rest are produced in China, in Taiwan, which, by the way, is a different country than China, and in other places around the world. But Intel has been a powerhouse. And lately, they seem to have fallen on really hard times. Let me get into the details of that in a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we love naysayers. Call the show. If you completely disagree.
Colors and mascots and football teams, but these are no longer institutions of higher education. These are no longer institutions of free thought and knowledge and discovering new ideas. These are far-left radical political entities. And you're not going to get a far-left radical to change what it is simply because a law. Because essentially, these are full-time radicals. You can pass whatever law you want. All it means is that they have to go order new business cards because they're merely changing their job title and continuing to do the exact same work that they are devoted to. DEI is a religion to them.
So what we have to do is cut off all their funding and starve them?
I mean, for me, that would be...
If you consider what's going on, if we held another census and we only counted those in the United States legally, people who are citizens, people with green cards, that sort of thing, you would end up with a much more accurate count of those who need to be represented. And by the way, really the only reason to have a census, at least back when the original requirement of the Constitution was put in, was to make sure that Americans were represented accurately. We have about 340 million people in this country. We have about 435 members of Congress. That means each member of Congress should represent about 800,000 people. Now, that's good representation. If you don't hold a census, if you don't redraw those census, the congressional districts, then what you end up with was one member of Congress might represent 2 million people. Somebody else would represent 250,000 people, depending on where the districts were in America, because people do move around. So what happens when you count all the illegal aliens? That means that some states, like California, like New York, and probably like Oregon and Washington, end up with more members of Congress simply because they have a lot of illegal aliens living there. I would ask you the question, if you need a clarification of that, do you think that illegal aliens deserve to be represented in America's government? They can't vote, they can't run for office, and yet You're going to argue that somehow they're entitled to congressional representation? I don't think so. But let me get back to Intel and why Donald Trump has said the CEO of Intel is highly conflicted and must resign immediately. His name is Lip-Bu Tan, and Lip-Bu Tan is the Intel CEO. President Trump has demanded his resignation. That caused Intel to take a hit on the stock market. What did Reuters publish about 3 or 4 months ago? Back in April, Reuters ran a story, and they found that Lip-Bu Tan, who is the CEO of Intel, controls more than 40 Chinese companies and has funds in and other minority stakes in about 600 different companies via an investment firm that he manages or he owns. And Reuters reported in many instances he shares minority stake ownership with Chinese government agencies. It turns out that some of those technology companies, because that's what the companies are involved in, they make chips and other technology for the Chinese military. Now, here's what Reuters reported. They said several investors interviewed by Reuters expressed concern about the scope of Tan's investments and that it could complicate the task of reviving Intel. Along with Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing and Samsung Electronics, Intel is one of three companies in the world who make the most advanced computer chips. Only one of them is based in the U.S., and that is Intel. And here's the way they summed it up. Andrew King, a partner at a venture capital firm, said this: the simple fact that Mr. Tan is unqualified to serve as the head of any company competing against China, let alone one with actual intelligence and national security ramifications like Intel, and its tremendous legacy connections to all areas of America's intelligence and defense ecosystem. That was his conclusion, Andrew King, because if he's running one of the major technology companies in America, the only major producer of advanced technology computer chips, according to Reuters, and then you put him in charge of Intel, but he's still got connections back to the Chinese government. As they reported back in April, they said the U.S.'s largest chip maker has invested in hundreds of Chinese technology firms, including at least eight with links to the People's Liberation Army, according to a Reuters review of Chinese and U.S. corporate filings. So what do we have? We've got China, which has been acting antagonistically toward the United States and the rest of the world. We have China that has built up its military substantially. We have China that has bought companies in the United States, and we've told you about some of them on this program, that produce technology for the military, and now they are under Chinese ownership. And then you have a man with the kind of connections that Lip-Bu Tan has, and he is running Intel, but apparently he has interests to be represented in Chinese companies as well that tie back to the Chinese government. You can see why that would be a problem, that if somebody is running a big American company and they're running it to compete with China, but they also have a dog in the fight when it comes to those Chinese companies, and he's the head of a company, or he's the head of a company, has interest in at least eight different companies with links to the People's Liberation Army. With all the concerns in America about the theft of high technology and the fact that China is willing to go out and steal the technology from other companies and other countries and then put it to use so that they can manufacture it and get rid of the kind of companies it would compete against in the United States. He is the CEO of a company that manufactures cutting-edge chips for the U.S. Department of Defense. They say this raises questions among investors about the extent of his ongoing involvement with businesses in China. And now you've got the President of the United States saying, with those kind of conflicts, he has to resign immediately. And as President Trump wrote on social media, on Truth Social, he said there is no other solution to this problem. Now, I've got the same kind of concern. If you're going to have American companies that actually go out there and compete hard to make the best technology in the world, and then there is a pipeline that could leave that technology at risk of being stolen by communist China, that cannot continue. I agree with President Trump. Glad to get your calls in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Thank you.
Mars has a face for radio?
He's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. The first time I heard about debanking, I actually got a call from a listener who said, I'm in the firearms business. I also have another business. I've always had good relations with my banks. And then one day the bank calls me up and says, we need you to come down, take all your deposits out and change and go somewhere else. They basically told him to get out. And I suspected, because I always want to check, I said, have you ever bounced a check? Have you ever gone south on a loan? Nope, nope, nope. He just said, and they won't tell me why they're doing it to me. Well, now we know because of things like Operation Choke Point under Obama and other kinds of instances, there have been debanking instances in which banks have simply said, we don't want to do business with you because of your politics. And I've always thought that was wrong. Well, now it sounds like it's getting fixed. Daniel Cameron is the former Kentucky Attorney General, now the CEO of the 1792 Exchange. Mr. Cameron, welcome back to the program.
Lars, it's always good to be with you. Thank you, my friend.
Now, these days, should I be referring to you as General Cameron? Because that probably means more in Kentucky than it would in my state or other states. But do you get to keep the title forever?
You know, titles come and go, but Daniel works well for me, my friend. So it's always good to chat with you. And, you know, this issue of debanking, I'm so glad you're covering it. And I know your listeners care about it, particularly if your listeners are conservatives or skew center right, is that there is a threat in this country that simply because of their values or because of their beliefs, they could be debanked by a financial institution. And it's a scary place to be in, but there are numerous accounts of it. And again, I'm just so glad you guys are covering it, because when you expose and shine light on something, which is something we try to do at 1792 Exchange, when you expose it, it actually helps stop it. And so, again, I'm thankful that you're covering it.
Well, let me ask you this, Daniel. Am I right in assuming most of the banks, if you actually got them to, I've been unsuccessful at getting bankers to come on and actually talk about the issue. I suspect they don't want to talk about it for various reasons. But are they going to say, well, we're at the mercy of the regulators. We have to do it because the federal regulators are going to look at us saying, you're taking deposits and doing banking for people in risky enterprises. Therefore, it's not really our fault. Have you been hearing that same kind of answer from them? And is that a valid answer? Is the industry of banking actually getting pressure from various federal governments or even state governments to do this to people?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You do hear that sometimes, that the regulators have forced our hand. Candidly, what you also hear from some of the leadership within these banks is that it's simply not happening. For instance, Tim Scott, who's the chairman of the banking committee in the United States Senate, brought a bunch of the C-suite folks from the banking institutions to the United States Senate for a hearing, and they kind of, you know, said that this isn't happening, or we're trying to sweep it under the rug. And what oftentimes banks will hide behind is this idea that they don't necessarily have to disclose why they've canceled or terminated a particular individual in terms of their banking access. So again, there's ample evidence that this does occur. There was an organization that did an event with Donald Trump Jr. and then within days had their contractor banking ability terminated. Senator Brownback, or Governor Brownback from Kansas, was head of a family council in Kansas. Because of traditional values, they had their contract or banking agreements terminated. Again, the list goes on and on of organizations, family policy councils that have found themselves without the ability to bank. And I'll tell your listeners, it's actually one of the reasons that I decided to have an open ear to cryptocurrencies or blockchain technology, because imagine a world in which a conservative or a center-right organization is no longer able to transact business
yep.
at a financial, traditional financial institution. That's a scary situation.
That's one of my concerns too, Daniel. I'm worried about money that can be turned on or turned off by the government or throttled in some way. The reason I ask about that is because it's one thing if the industry says we have to do it because the regulators are forcing us. It's another thing if it's, say, it's woke folks on their board of directors saying, hey, get us out of all that Second Amendment stuff. We don't want to have anything to do with conservatives. Yeah. And they're doing it, and then they're hiding behind the excuse, well, you know, our fiduciary duty is we aren't allowed to talk about our customers, so you may say it's happening, but we'll just flatly deny it, and you have no way to find it out. So in that case, is it coming from the corporations that run the banks?
I think there are a lot of folks internal to these the banking industry, particularly within the last 5 years or so. I mean, you saw on social media platforms that anyone that was willing to espouse a center-right or conservative free-thinking position on health, on election security and integrity, those people were being deplatformed. They were having their message suppressed. And you were seeing this sort of thinking and ideology make its way to the banking institutions, where, again, if you hold traditional values or if you were in the business of being a gun producer or a gun shop owner, if you found yourself ultimately, again, with a conservative-leaning institution, you were at jeopardy for having your banking qualifications taken away from you all of a sudden. So again, banks do sometimes rely on regulators or try to pass the buck on, but they have a lot of authority and ability within banking institutions. And it's subsequently you've seen, you know, JP Morgan and some of these other institutions come out and say, hey, we're going to say without reservation that we respect the ability, assuming there's no criminal activity, we respect the ability of everyone to bank at our institution. But that's only happened within the last year or so, and that's in large part driven by the fact that President Trump is in the White House, and you've got folks on Capitol Hill and yourself that are paying attention to this, and therefore American citizens are paying attention to this. And well, that's the only reason something is starting to change.
Daniel, does Trump's executive order fix this problem by telling the banks you've got to take, and the regulators, take the reputational risk nonsense out of the language?
I think everything, every step that the President Trump and his administration have made related to DEI or ESG or empowering citizens against big corporations and stopping the deplatforming nonsense and trying to ensure that banks no longer terminate contracts with, you know, center-right organizations, I think is the right step. And I know there's a legislative effort being undertaken in the House and Senate to ensure that there's more transparency when there are terminations of banking contracts. So all these things are good things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And again, I do believe it is occurring because we are seeing more light that's being or more exposure of this sort of activity by banks and candidly by other big corporations or social media platforms. So yes, a short answer is what President Trump is doing is helping. But we need, you know, your listeners to make sure that they're calling their representatives and their senators to ensure that there continues to be good movement on this issue. Because
absolutely. Daniel Cameron is the former Kentucky Attorney General, now CEO of the 1792 Exchange, and debanking should not be happening. And believe me, I hear plenty of stories about people who simply seen their business go away because their bank said, we're not going to do business with you anymore. And how can you run any business without some banks? You've got the Lars Larson Show. Hey, it's Lars.
Sometimes the truth is awkward.
You know what the Muslims call the Jews in the Quran? The children of Israel. Well, this is awkward.
Now, more truth from Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. And our ex-poll today, should America hold another census to count only those legally in the country? President Trump on Truth Social announcing that they will have another census and that illegal aliens will not be counted. He says it's absolutely essential that we do this, and I tend to agree with him. And in fact, the Democrats, well, the Democrats are going to lose their mind if this happens, because they're going to say, you can't make us give up our illegal aliens. They'll be almost as mad as they were when the Democrats were told way back when by Abraham Lincoln, you can't keep your slaves. Because to the Democrats, well, illegal aliens play the same role. They do the hard, dirty work that allegedly Americans don't want to do, although I think an awful lot of Americans do want to do it. And, of course, they are a convenient foil or a convenient tool to use to get what the Democrats want. The Democrats are going to be mad once again, and that's okay. Today's X-Poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, today, I started out by talking about a situation that's going on in Seattle, but it's actually happening in Portland and a lot of other cities as well. What's happening is property owners are finding people who are homeless, meaning mostly drug addicts, who've taken up residence on their property. They brought trash with them. They brought needles with them. They brought all kinds of trouble with them. And then they're told by the city of Seattle, you are required to go out and spend the money and take the time and make the effort to clean all this up. And if you don't, we will fine you. In the case of one property owner, $500 for every day the cleanup is not done to the satisfaction of the city of Seattle. And Dan wrote in and said, Lars, I'll confirm you for you that the city of Portland is requiring the same cleanup or face steep fines just like Seattle is. We lease a property along Johnson Creek. Our landlord was served a 10-day notice that an encampment was on our property and must be removed or face a daily fine. We had to walk through the encampments and make sure they were empty before Portland's junk removal folks would even go in and clean it up. The campers just moved downstream to city or metro property. No fines there, signed Dan. Now, let me go to Gordon, who's a naysayer on this subject. Gordon, thanks for the call from Everett, and thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What do you and I disagree about on this subject?
I do beg to differ. I do believe there should be a fee, and it should be stiff, because the owner did not protect the property. Whatever they're allowing in, they should pay for all the stuff, and the private owners of the rent should have to pay, because it's affecting the community.
Gordon, could you tell me, Gordon, you mentioned an interesting idea, that the property owner could not or did not protect his property. So if somebody comes and sets up a tent and drags their shopping cart that they stole from a grocery store off onto your property along with a bunch of garbage, how would you go about protecting your property from that?
It wouldn't have happened in the first place.
Ask you that. So you wake up tomorrow morning and there's a camper on your property, camped out on your property. How would you go about removing them?
I guess I'd call somebody.
You'd call somebody? You mean the police, who will tell you, that's your property, sir. You've got a civil problem here. Somebody is trespassing. We'll write them a ticket, right, but we're not going to remove them. Again, you're expecting the property owner to protect his property. You mentioned the idea. How would you go about doing it yourself? Let's assume I'm the guy who set up the tent on your front lawn, and I'm camping on your property, and I've dragged all kinds of garbage onto your property. You're about to get a fine. Gordon, how would you remove me?
How would I remove you? It's not up to me at that point.
No, you said you would protect your property. How would you do that?
Well, I didn't do it good enough.
Well, what do you mean by that?
I mean, you can put a fence on your property.
And do you know that the city and the county and the states have lots and lots of fences, and the homeless just tear them down and destroy them and camp anyway? Fences don't solve the problem. If you think they do, I'll bet you could get in your car and drive around your community and find places where the homeless have simply gone right through fences, any other kind of barriers. Heck, they went into that boarded up Joann's store in Ballard.
Yeah.
I think it's in Ballard, and they set up shop there. And the property owner got fined because of the mess they made. How should he have protected his property?
Put somebody on the property. It's a security guard.
Oh, and okay. Let's pretend you're the security guard. I've showed up. I'm a homeless guy. I'm going to set up my camp right here. What have you told your security guard he's allowed to do to me to keep me from setting up my camp?
Just watch. But you
watch as I set up my tent and my tarp and put my fire pit out there and drag all my garbage with me. He's going to watch me, and that's going to stop me from doing it.
It ain't going to stop you, but it's still the owner's responsibility to protect their own property.
Except that you haven't told me one single thing that a property owner could do that would keep those people out. And if you don't think that's true, go ask some of the people where they've got homeless people who have set up camp all over their property, and they're told, well, why didn't you keep them from coming on the property? And the answer is, under the law, you have no way to make that happen. But Gordon, good try. Naysayer, you got the Lars Larson Show. Lord.